Welcome to this very special Clinical Investigator General Medical Oncologist Summit on the management of one of the most common clinical scenarios in the field, the usual initial presentation of the most common cancer seen in practice, metastatic non-small cell lung cancer, with particular emphasis on so-called wild-type disease. Our initial plan was to gather 8 leading lung cancer investigators and 4 general medical oncologists in community-based practice to discuss algorithms and actual cases in our Miami studio, but like pretty much every CME event involving face-to-face interaction, we had to find a virtual solution, and the first step was for me to meet online and on video with each of the 4 general medical oncologists and have them present cases and questions they wanted to see discussed by the faculty. We then conducted 2 online video roundtable discussions with 4 faculty each, in which we discussed the clinical questions in the survey and a number of the cases presented by the oncologists. You're about to hear the first roundtable with Drs. John Haymock, Leora Horn, Melissa Johnson, and Ben Levy. And to supplement all of this, we posted an 8-part lecture series by the faculty encompassing 3 hours of content. In the first segment of our roundtable, we addressed 2 of the most important issues in the management of metastatic non-small cell lung cancer, the initial genomic workup, and first and second line treatment of patients without targetable tumor mutations. Dr. Levy began the discussion.
The critical aspect of all of this is genotyping the patient. And I think that this has evolved over time. And for these patients where you have enough material from a biopsy, I think clearly you want to send tissue off for comprehensive genomic profiling. That includes all relevant biomarkers, but you know, you want to do a next generation sequencing panel. I think the big question here is the utility of what I call layering in the liquid or doing a plasma biopsy at the same time. And I think my current practice is to do both. I will tell you there are times I don't do both, and that is patients that I've already received the result from tissue, or we get increasingly more pushback from insurance companies about doing both at the same time. So as a general rule for adenocarcinoma, I will do both tissue and plasma on most patients based on some recent data that when you layer in the liquid, you increase your chances of identifying an actual mutation. For squames, I generally don't though, but there are scenarios where I may not do both. And that is when I've assured enough tissue on a biopsy and we can wait and insurance is pushing back. Those would be some of the scenarios where I may not do both.
So Leora, you know, I've been kind of surprised to see how much testing gets done when you say it's a squamous case. I mean, is it really worth doing if it's clear-cut squamous? Is it worth doing NGS, for example, Leora?
So we actually don't necessarily do NGS on all of our patients with squamous. We'll do it on the younger patients, on the never smokers. You know, now that capmatinib is approved for patients with MET exon 14, that has been identified in patients with squamous cell lung cancer, so that may be a reason to consider doing the NGS in patients with squamous, although the incidence is pretty low. But we don't routinely do NGS in patients with squamous cell histology.
Melissa, any comments on the use of liquid assays in the upfront setting? I guess you get the results quicker, which is beneficial, but in what situations are you doing both?
I guess when I answered this question, I was thinking about the fact that each hospital in Sarah Cannon's network does the reflex testing for the FDA-approved therapies based on the oncogenes that will result in their therapy a little differently. And so we've struggled across Sarah Cannon's network to find a way to make sure that we're getting adequate testing. And so often when patients come to us initially, that testing is cooking, whatever it is, hotspot panels, NGS panels, and the liquid testing is a way to make sure that nothing got missed quickly as you're getting ready to start frontline therapy, Neil. So I agree with all of my other colleagues that there is a benefit of tissue-based NGS testing, and liquid and tissue are not analogous. But I like the rapid turnaround time of the liquid test. Basically, it's a second check to make sure none of the oncogene drivers have been missed. And it saves tissue for trial. And that's the other thing I'm always trying to do.
So, John, you know, in other cancers, we have, for example, prostate cancer, you have PSA as the tumor marker. There's a bunch of tumor markers out there. I'm starting to see, I'm not sure I understand the technology, but assays looking at genomics as a way to
sort of get a handle on tumor load, so to speak, you know, kind of like a tumor marker. Any comments on that kind of strategy and whether there's any serologic way you can actually follow? I've seen, you know, for example, allele frequency if you have an abnormality. John, anything there?
Sure. So with the emergence now of liquid-based next-generation sequencing, this does give the opportunity that you might be able to follow blood over time. I don't think it's quite ready right now to use routinely as a marker of tumor bulk the way that you would use a CA125 for ovarian cancer or a PSA for prostate cancer. And this is for a couple of reasons. One is that tumors have different degrees of shedding. So, for example, you know, we've done a recent analysis. We've seen EGFR mutant tumors tend to shed more. This looks like it's mainly because they have more copy number, but there are some tumors that either don't have detectable mutations or they just don't shed as much. So you may be misled if you don't see anything detectable in the ctDNA to thinking that you've had a great response. The other thing is that, so the measure that we use, we call this the VAF, the variant allele frequency. So that's just measuring out of all of a given allele like EGFR, what percentage of it is the mutant EGFR, so presumably from the tumor, as compared to everything else in your blood. Now, we know if you've got a good targeted therapy like an EGFR inhibitor, that goes down when you respond. But we also know tumors can transform, they can lose different genes. So we're not ready right now to use VAF as a marker routinely, but I think in specific oncogene-driven subgroups like EGFR or ALK, it may be a more useful marker. The one other place where it may turn out to be useful is in the setting of adjuvant therapy. There's a couple of studies, including one from our site, that if you resect a tumor and there's a detectable ctDNA in the plasma after resection, that's associated with really high risk. So those may be patients that merit different treatment, but you still don't detect it in everybody. In the early stage, you're only detecting ctDNA in maybe half the cases. So I think VAF in plasma DNA has potential. There are certain things it may be used for in the future, but it's not quite ready yet to be used as a general marker for tumor load.
So general medical oncologists are used to hearing about MRD and particularly the hematologic cancers, myeloma, you hear about it, CLL, et cetera. We'll see if that kind of concept ever comes into solid tumors.